Nityanand, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. A long purport, I'll try to do my best to explain it. So as mentioned here, it's saying here, Griheshu Avishitam Chapi. Even though a person has entered into householder life, marriage life, householder life, if that person is kushala karmanam, if he is engaged in auspicious activities, auspicious activity means devotional service to Krishna, he's engaged in auspicious activities, and whatever he has in his possessions, money, various paraphernalia, etc., he uses that griha mata. Mata means then it is considered that that griha, that householder, will not be bound up. Will not be bound up. Although he is entered grihastha ashram, he will not be bound up. So the idea here is that generally speaking, one who enters into a householder life can be put in a very dangerous situation when he is not properly trained up. Because householder life, basically, I'm using the word household, grihastha, grihamedi interchangeably. Don't mind, Prabhupada does the same. Householder life generally means, in the material world, those without spiritual training, those who have not been trained by spiritual authority, then to enter into a householder life generally means to expand the material existence and one's entanglement in it. This is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Pum Sastriya Mituni Bhavametam, Tayormita Hridaya Granti Ahu, Atogriha Shetra Suptapta Vitar Janasa Mohoya Mahamameti. This is mentioned, this is generally what it means to enter into householder life. The beginning of entering into householder life is the desire for sexual enjoyment. That's a fact. No one should think love, romance, all these things. It is a fact. Generally, the beginning of it is desire for sexual enjoyment. Mituni bhavametam means that you want to enjoy sex life. So, boy sees girl, girl sees boy. Or in Kali Yuga, any various amounts of combinations go on. And they get attracted to one another. So, tayor mita hridaya grantiyahu. So, this mita means there's a mutual hridaya granti, a mutual tying of the heart. Heart knot. The idea here is that the attachment that one has to the spouse, the girlfriend, the partner, whatever words, so many words you to use to be politically correct, then that attachment is stronger than any other type of attachment in the material world. We may have other things that we are attached to, like computer. How many people have computers here, iPhones, these things like that? How many of you get a little attached in the sense that you don't want anyone else using it? Your friend says, can I borrow that? Well, you know, when are you going to bring it back? And you want to know the details, how long you're going to have it. So generally, we're attached to various sense objects, but no object is creates bondage, attachment in the heart, tying the knot, more than the attachment to the object of sex enjoyment. That is the strongest attachment. So it's called as a mutual attachment because you may be attached to your computer or iPhone, whatever it may be, but if you become disgusted with it, you can throw it away and the computer will not hang on to you. Huh? But when you try to throw away some object of sex enjoyment, they will catch you. So even if you become detached from them, they don't become detached from you. So that's why this is called a heart knot. The attachment to other objects are a knot, but detachment to sexual enjoyment is a heart knot. Because even if you want to give up, they don't give you up. Then the problem is there. So then from that attachment, Rishabhdev continues to explain, Atogriha Shetra Sutapta Vitara. Then one begins to expand from there. First, like now you're living a simple brahmacharini, brahmachari, simple life is there. Then you hook up. And then what happens? Well, we need a house. That's the first thing, right? And then we need to travel to the temple. The house is a little far away, so we need a car. Now, how am I going to pay for all this? We need a job. And then you have to deal with the in-laws, and they have so many opinions, and you have to satisfy everyone's opinions. And this way, all of a sudden, you have this huge, how you say, empire. And then children come, and all these things come. And then once you get inside that situation, that is not the bad part. I mean, that sounds bad, but the worst part about this is that what happens is the conception develops that I have the right to enjoy all this paraphernalia. I've worked hard for it, and therefore I'm the rightful enjoyer of it. In other words, just like tuberculosis, you heard this disease, tuberculosis is a very contagious disease. So if you're in an area where someone has tuberculosis, if they sneeze, then you can catch it and you'll become diseased. You'll have tuberculosis. So similarly, misconceptions of life are like that. You cannot understand when you're catching them. Just like tuberculosis, someone sneezes, and you don't take it very seriously. You're like, okay, someone's sneezing. Then all of a sudden, a couple of days later, you're having all the symptoms of tuberculosis. So you cannot understand when you have caught it, from where you have caught it, etc. So similarly, misconceptions are like that. They enter inside one's consciousness without one's ability to perceive them. Another example is given in the Bhagavatam that's nice. It says just like a lake that is surrounded by these long, how you say, stalks of grass, I guess. So these long stalks of grass, they drink the lake water, you know? But you don't see that. All of a sudden, the lake is getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower, and then it's dried up because all the long stalks of grass have sucked up all the water. So in the same way, misconceptions act like that, like these long stalks of grass. And they suck up all one's, let's say, pure consciousness and fill it up with material conceptions like that. And you don't perceive it. The idea of this analogy is that it happens imperceptibly. So in the same way, one catches misconceptions imperceptibly. So the real danger about the householder situation, I'm just speaking from that angle because that's the angle Prabhupada using the verse is saying, is that one quickly catches misconceptions. I am the proprietor. And once I am the proprietor, I am the natural enjoyer of the thing. I am the maintainer. I am the provider. And this way, I'm God, because that's what it means to be God. God is actually the protector, the provider, the maintainer, the proprietor, the enjoyer. That is Krishna's position. So you enter inside that situation, you expand your empire, and imperceptibly the idea comes because you have your duties, right? Your duty is you have to take care of all those things. That is your duty also. So then what ends up happening is imperceptibly, even though executing your duty, the idea comes that, well, I am the maintainer. I am the provider. I am the protector. I am the proprietor. I am the enjoyer naturally. And that way, by catching that misconception, he becomes bound up to material existence. It's called karma bandhanaha. He becomes bound. And with that idea, he goes on through his existence. And then at the end of life, he has to accept another material body. And then in the next life, without spiritual training, he does the same thing again and again and again, life after life. In other words, without spiritual training, it's unavoidable. One cannot immunize himself from such diseases. The diseases of misconception are too subtle. There is no question of immunity from them in this atmosphere without spiritual training. This Prabhupada has made this point here. So that's the essence of this verse. So even though he has entered Grihastha Ashram, if he's engaged in devotional service, offering everything he has to Krishna, passing his time in hearing the narrations of Krishna constantly, then he will not be bound up even though he's entered the householder situation. That's what's being described here. And that's my summary of the verse. You understand the essence? This is what's being described. So just some specific details, and then I'm going to close up here. What is being mentioned by Srila Prabhupada very beautifully in the purport. In the first section, Srila Prabhupada is discussing basically, the living entity in the material world is constantly oscillating between two positions. One position is, I am the enjoyer. Another position is renunciation. This situation, living entity is always oscillating in the material world. Because his nature is to enjoy happiness. Ananda maya obhyasat. The nature of the soul is to enjoy bliss, happiness. And in order to enjoy that bliss, he has to come in contact with rasa.
ever do this. This is Boca Tiaga. Oh, again and again and again. One is doing this since time immemorial, trying to enjoy, and when frustrated in his enjoyment, renunciation. We hear our Prabhupada tell sour grape story. When Fox is there, he's trying to catch the grapes on one tree, but the grapes are a little bit too high, you know. So, he's just missing it, just missing it. That's usually the most painful. If it was like way high, then it doesn't disturb, you know. But if it was very, and you're just missing it, it's very agitating to the mind. So he's just missing, just. And then he said, "Oh, these grapes are sour grapes. I don't want them." This is Boca Tiaga. He renounces. But as soon as the branch is a little bit low enough, he said, "Ah, these were the good grapes." On the material world, this is called Boca Tiaga. All right. When he cannot enjoy, he says, "I give it up." And when he's able to enjoy, he goes after it. Both situations are not the constitutional nature of the soul. Therefore, he cannot be fixed in any situation. He cannot be either fixed in enjoying or fixed in renunciation, because it is not natural to the soul. It's unnatural. So what's being described here by Srila Prabhupada is, first, the person catches the conception that I am the enjoyer, bhoga. So he goes after, I've done so many activities, I've done so many austerities, so much yajna I've done, and therefore, I am the beneficiary of all that I've done. I am the rightful enjoyer. He thinks like this. And then he becomes bound up in accepting body after body after body. This is called karma bandhanaha. Karma bandhanaha means that you've done some action, and that action produces some reactions that force you to do some more activities that are more implicating. It's called karma bandhanaha. This is a very cruel system in one sense. The severe laws of material nature. You do some activity that causes you to be in a situation that forces you to do something that is more implicating. And this is called karma bandhana. This is what it means to accept body after body. So he's thinking, I am the bhoga, I am the enjoyer. I am the bhokta, I am the enjoyer, and all this is bhoga for my enjoyment. And then he tries to enjoy and becomes more and more implicated in material existence. Karma bandhana. So then, after some time, he may gain the understanding that I am being entangled in material existence. Just like boy meets girl, he first by himself, and they come together and everything expands. In the beginning, he thinks this is very nice. I have my beautiful wife, and I have my handsome husband, and I have so much of money, so much of facility. Sometimes they look at the brahmacharis, the poor fellows are suffering so much, they feel bad for us. They have to sleep on the floor. They're thinking like this. Many materialistic householder people think like this. But then he starts to get old. You know, old age is a very miserable situation, because in old age, you cannot enjoy anything. Just like people, they work hard their whole life to retire when they're 70. But at 70, you cannot enjoy anything. It's total foolishness. So in old age, your senses become impotent. You cannot enjoy anything. And plus, basically everything in the material world is decaying. Even our experience of relationships is decaying. So then he doesn't want to be with this person anymore. Then he realizes, I've been trapped. I'm trapped. I'm entangled. He wants to get out. She wants to get out. But they realize, now I'm trapped. I cannot get out. So sometimes that understanding comes to a living entity, that I'm actually entangled. But problem is, he does not know what to do to unentangle himself. This is he tries. So then, the usual idea that comes to mind is tyag. Let me give it up. This is the usual idea. I'm entangled. I don't like being entangled. Who likes to be entangled? Anyone likes to be bound up? No, I'm entangled. So then the first idea that comes is give it up. So there are two types of people who do this. Those who are qualified to do so by dint of realization, and those who are unqualified to do so because they only have understanding they are entangled, but they don't have realization of it. Understand? Two types of people. Those who actually achieve jnana. Jnana means they actually understand the difference between matter and spirit. They actually qualify for renunciation. Then there are those who only understand that they're a spirit, but they haven't realized it. They are not qualified for renunciation. For them, it is recommended karma yoga. That is the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is discussing this with Arjuna. If someone shall irresponsibly renounce, seeing that I'm entangled, he shall irresponsibly renounce the thing, then because of insufficient purification of heart, he enters again into bhoga. You know, this bhoga tyaga program doesn't continues because he's not sufficiently purified. So he gives up. He takes sannyas also. He becomes babaji, something like this. I'll give up everything, renounce. And then he meets his wife on the bank of Godavari doing his bhajan. And again, he becomes entangled. This is a story that comes like that. I'm thinking of a story that happens. And then, because he was not actually sufficiently purified to renounce. Then there are those who are sufficiently purified. They can actually renounce because of dental realization. But both persons are in illusion. Understand? Both persons are in illusion because they've caught up the wrong conception. See, as long as we're working with the wrong conception, we must continue material existence. That's a fact. As long as we have, just like I mentioned many times, if you're looking for the temple and someone tells you the temple is south, but actually the temple is north, we're north side. So then if you have that misconception is south, you keep moving south very confidently. You know, 60 miles per hour, you move very confidently south and you'll never come closer to the temple. So similarly, if we are working with a misconception, we'll never come close to solving our problem. Prabhupada's simple analogy, 2 + 2 = 5, then you will never come to the right conclusion. So even though to work with the idea that I am the enjoyer, the bhokta, that is wrong conception. And then to start to give up everything, thinking I am renouncing these things, that is also wrong conception. Both persons continue material existence. So what is a proper conception? That is being described here. The proper conception is that everything belongs to God, Krishna. He is actually the bhokta. He is a beneficiary of all austerities we are performing, all the activities. Krishna is the proprietor of this whole material existence. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Therefore, nothing to renounce. There's nothing to renounce. There's nothing to enjoy because it is not mine. Just like when you see someone else's wife, you don't think, I renounce her. Huh? If you think like that, you'll be in great trouble. Because of the putti of that lady, he'll come beat you up. You know, yes, definitely you renounce. And I'll help you to renounce even more. I'll help you to get the conception together. So similarly, if he thinks I will enjoy her, that is also wrong conception. Because she is the husband of someone else. So similarly, to think I will enjoy this material world is wrong idea. To think I will renounce the material world is also wrong idea. Because Krishna is actually the proprietor of everything. So there is nothing to renounce, there is nothing to enjoy. This is the beginning of the right conception. So what do I do? Because I'm existing in the material world. So Prabhupada is quoting Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur. Krishna majane yaha hai anuku, vishaya balya tyage taha haya bhul. He translates it as, if one is so expert that he can engage everything or dovetail everything in the service of the Lord, to give up the material world would be a great blunder. One should learn how to dovetail everything in the service of the Lord, for everything is connected to Krishna. That is the real purpose of life and secret of success. This verse, quoted from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is a stanza that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written to the Yuta Vairagya verse. This verse is an explanation of Yuta Vairagya verse. The Yuta Vairagya verse, Anansaktasya Vishayan. What is that? Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, Yuta Vairagya Uchita, Yataharam Upayunjita. This verse explains that the mentality of a devotee. We've already described, devotee does not think he is the enjoyer, he does not think he has anything to renounce. So how does a devotee exist then? Because that is how we've always existed since time immemorial. Either I am the enjoyer, or I am renouncing something. There was no other position. No living entities cannot think of another position. Either I am the enjoyer, or I am the renouncer. So when Krishna starts talking about the Buddha Yoga and Bhagavad Gita, it's very bewildering for the jiva. He cannot understand what it means. You know, Krishna says, you don't work for enjoyment, neither you give up your duty. What am I doing? He gets bewildered. That's why Arjuna said, I don't understand. Because conditioned soul cannot understand that. Because he's been doing bhoga tyaga his whole material existence. So Krishna says, you don't enjoy everything. Okay, the renunciation. That's what Arjuna was thinking. And then Krishna said, but you don't renounce either. Then he got bewildered. He gets bewildered. So jiva cannot understand this. So how does a devotee exist? This is his understanding, conception. Anansaktasya Vishayan means he understands that there's nothing to enjoy. He's not trying to enjoy anything in this world. Yatarha Upayunchuta. But he, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, according to the suitability of the thing, he is using that thing. According to its suitability in terms of service to Krishna, he is using that thing. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. Why? Because he can see everything is actually given by Krishna for Krishna. He understands this thing. Everything is given by Krishna for Krishna. That is his understanding. The microphone is given by Krishna for Krishna. It's not given by scientists. It's given by Krishna. Because who gave the brains to the scientists? So Krishna gets ultimate credit. Even the scientists say, I created the thing, but who gave you the brain to do that? This is mentioned by Jambavan in 10th canto, that Krishna, he's the brain of all the brains. He's the brain behind all the brains. So even if someone, I created the thing, well, who gave you the brain to do that? Krishna gave the brain to do that. Therefore, everything is actually given by Krishna for Krishna. This is the devotee's understanding. So he has his service to Krishna. So if it has his suitability and service to Krishna, then he uses that thing. And if it doesn't have his suitability and service to Krishna, he does not hate the thing. This is like the renouncers, they hate material existence. He has no use. It's not a big deal. It's just like when you're going to take prasadam, then there's one plate is there, and there's so many plates there. You don't say, oh, these plates. No, it is there. It's not a big deal. I have no use for it right now. It's just there. And then if there's some use for it, you know, at 9, 1, and, 6:30 or whatever, then again, according to suitability, I use it. Right? So that's the devotee. He doesn't make a big deal. If he doesn't need to use it for service to Krishna, he does not hate the thing. It has no suitability right now. But if it has suitability in service to Krishna, then he takes care of that thing very nicely. One time, Himanshu Prabhu, he told me, I want to come to the stage that I'm so detached from everything that after I get my paycheck and I walk outside and someone snatches my paycheck, then I'll be completely detached from the thing. I'll not do anything about it. I'll be so peaceful internally. And Mayavad understanding. I said, that is okay, but a devotee will chase him down. Huh? And then tackle him. Huh? The materialistic person do the same thing. The devotee also, with a seeker flying up and down like this. Yeah, like football flying up. And then he tackles the person, rolls on the ground, takes the money back and says, Hare Krishna. Why? Because that money has suitability in service to Krishna. So he will protect that thing very seriously. It's a very serious thing. He does not reject. I have a problem with this thing overall. Just my whole life I've had. Generally, I'm not very responsible with money. And many times people think that, I'm detached. I say it's not detachment, it's irresponsibility. Because I'm working up with the wrong conception. I'm thinking it is my money. Someone has given me it is my money. So I don't care what happens to it. But if it's Krishna's money, then a very serious thing, a very sacred thing has to be protected. So the devotee has caught that understanding. According to suitability, he uses it. And if it's not suitable, he doesn't use it. This is called, then Yukta Vairagya Mutrite. This is called the proper way of renunciation. Proper way of renunciation. Prabhupada says one should learn how to dovetail everything. So one has to learn this. It is not that it can be artificially imitated. Because the first qualification is anansaktashavishayan. You should not be attached to the sense objects. Who here can say they are not attached to the sense objects? It's an impossible thing to say that. No one can honestly say, I am not attached to the sense objects. Anyone can say that thing. I am not attached. Simply, I'm using it according to suitability. And then you go to Best Buy, and the devotee is there for 15 hours a day, according to suitability. Shopping, everything. Everything can be used in Krishna's service. Then he becomes entangled in material existence. So one has to learn this thing. That is the most important point. He has to learn this thing from spiritual authority who is actually detached. What is my final point here in describing all this, based on Prabhupada's last paragraph here, that a devotee is equipoised in happiness and distress. If great opulence comes to a devotee, he does not think, all right, just like this is a very dangerous thing. Actually, you'll notice this in the context if you pay attention. That if you get a lot of money, suddenly you get a lot of money, immediately sinful desires start coming to the surface. And not that they're not there, they're already there. But when you get facility to fulfill those things, then all of a sudden they surface to the front of the consciousness. So when a devotee gets Atmanas, he does not think like that. Okay, Best Buy, here I come. You know, he thinks rather, oh, Krishna must have given so much Atmanas for his service. Who can think like that? Prabhupada says a mature devotee can think like that. Not everyone. A mature devotee, he can think like that. And then for all the immature devotees who are actually attached to the material platform, what does Krishna do for them? He takes everything away from them. That's why you see most of the sadhakas look despondent most of the time. All the time looking sad, you know, because everything being taken away. Not my dog, you know, like in a movie or something. My television, what's going on? My wife. Sometimes it happens like that. Krishna will take everything away from the immature devotee so he can actually focus on devotional service. So for a devotee, a mature devotee, he doesn't get bewildered in any situation, actually. Because the most important thing for him is the delegation of Krishna. I'm thinking of the verse, Raga Dvesha Vimuktaishtu Vishayan Indriyaishtaran Atma Masharvide Yatma Matprasada Adigachati. Krishna says the person who can get his mercy is that person who is free from Raga Dvesha. I like this, I don't like this. That person will get Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada describes in the purport that the activity that a devotee would have ordinarily done, if Krishna does not want it, he will not do it. And something that a devotee would have ordinarily not done, if Krishna wants it, then he will do it. That means for a devotee, the most important thing is the delegation of Krishna. That is the most important thing. So either in this situation or that situation, it is the delegation of Krishna that the devotee is considering. That is the most important thing. That is his service. Delegation of Krishna means the instruction of Krishna. That is the thing that the devotee is seeing. So he does not get bewildered. When he sees much material opulences come, then in light of the delegation of Krishna, he sees how to use that opulence in service of Krishna. And if nothing is there, then according to the delegation of Krishna, he acts accordingly. That is the most important thing. So the devotee has to learn this thing from a proper spiritual authority. Huh? Proper spiritual authority is the embodiment of the delegation of Krishna. Understand? The spiritual authority is the embodiment of the delegation, because Krishna is not directly instructing any one of us. Someone may say like that, I am receiving direct from Krishna, most puffed up person, victim of false pride. I read that verse last time, victim of false pride. Actually, he sees the devotee, spiritual master Acharya, as the embodiment of the delegation of Krishna. And so he learns from, according to the service given by a spiritual master, by Sadhu, Guru, Vaishnava, then he engages in this material world, according to that. Otherwise, he does not engage in anything. That is the conception. Therefore, he is never bewildered. Reason we become bewildered, because we don't accept the delegation of Krishna. Even if Krishna were directly to speak to us, we will not accept Krishna. We think, I'm not accepting him because I have a doubt. I think he may be fallible. You know, we think that about the guru. He may be fallible. I heard him misquote some verses completely off, you know. He is not a bona fide guru. One is having so many doubts. In the material world means the atmosphere of doubts. So we don't accept the delegation of Krishna. As a result of not accepting, we always bewildered about what to do. Always bewildered because there's no service. No service in Krishna. The plane of devotional service is a very high plane of existence. And small jivas like us have no access to it. Only if something or someone from that plane comes down, we can have access to that plane of existence. So that is guru. That is spiritual master. He gives the delegation of Krishna, and that delegation allows access to that plane. The devotee takes that most seriously as his life and soul, as Prabhupada said. And that way he is never bewildered. Jivas who don't accept the delegation of Krishna, they always bewildered. They move from this position, bhogatyaga, constantly. They cannot give it up. So if they are not accepted the delegation of Krishna, they shall enter the Grihastha ashram, then they become bound up. Definitely. Any ashram, but it's being mentioned Grihastha ashram. If they don't want to accept delegation of Krishna, then they'll be bound up. Definitely. No doubt about it. But if they accept the delegation of Krishna, then it's called Kushala Karmana, then auspicious activities. Auspicious activities doesn't happen without the delegation of Krishna. Mahat Kripa Vina Kono Karmin Bhakti Nai. It says without the mercy of a Mahat, then your activities are not called bhakti. Kona karma bhakti na is not called bhakti without the mercy of a Mahat. What is the mercy of Mahat? The delegation of Krishna. So if a devotee shall accept that, then it's called Kushla Karmana. Then his activities are all auspicious activities. And then Mat Varta Yata. Then he passes his life happily hearing about Krishna constantly. And in that way, even though, although he is entered Grihastha Ashram, he would not be bound up. Otherwise, definitely bound up. In any ashram, what is being mentioned here, Grihastha Ashram. So that's what I can understand in this long purport. Someone wants to ask something?
Prabhu, can you explain how by hearing from the wrong persons, from hearing from persons who are maybe offensive, and how also by criticizing devotees or criticizing ISKCON can hamper or destroy one's ability to experience spiritual ras?
Well, it's an easy answer. In the context of which you're presenting, criticizing ISKCON, for many of us, ISKCON is the hand that is feeding us. So you heard this saying before, don't bite the hand that feeds you. You heard this saying before? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Our mother is feeding you and you're criticizing mother. Then what is she? Okay, fine, then I'll not feed you. Then you will realize what is your position. You'll be homeless. So we should not bite the hand that feeds them. That is a very foolish thing. People oftentimes, they may criticize ISKCON, and also other groups will criticize ISKCON also. But this is, after all, it's a material world. There is no situation that is totally perfect in the material atmosphere. So you criticize ISKCON and you go to this group, that group will have so many problems. Then you criticize that group, then you go to the next group, and that group will have so many problems. Then you criticize that group, you go to the next group, and that group will have so many problems. Then you say, there is no group that is good. Only I am good. Right? That is the consciousness then. That's the basic understanding. Only I am good. Therefore, I will start my own movement, and then you'll have so many followers, and they'll criticize you. Krishna will give you so much of mercy. And they'll criticize you. So actually, one should not bite the hand that feeds them. Krishna's told that in every endeavor there is some fault. So there will be fault everywhere in the material world. We have to try to understand the essence of things. That is a very difficult thing. So if you hear from someone who has actually not understood the essence of things, so therefore they're excessively critical because of not understanding the essence, then like that tuberculosis example I've given, then you catch up the same disease. Then you will be shelterless. By criticizing, you end up in a shelterless position. Why? Because you reject your shelters. Understand? If you criticize, ISKCON is giving shelter. Like now, we are all sitting here by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and I would say more specifically, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada's followers, who have maintained ISKCON movement for over 40 years now. How much we're supposed to be thankful for Srila Prabhupada's followers. They were not there to see to the maintenance of these centers, then there would be no question of Krishna consciousness. So they have maintained. We are so indebted to them, in fact. That is, we cannot return the debt, in fact. Just that they've connected us to the Krishna conception, we are internally indebted. So if we shall criticize them, find fault with them, like Ramchandra Puri found fault with Mahaprabhu, oh, he's a sannyasi eating so many sweets. I cannot accept him. Then what happened? He criticized his own spiritual master. His own spiritual master was in great devotional ecstasy, crying in separation from Krishna. Oh, why are you crying? You should be fixed in Brahman. His spiritual master said, get him out, get him out. If I die seeing his face, I don't know what destination I will attain. You know? And then after that, he developed this mentality of criticizing Vaishnava, and he ended up shelterless. No shelter. Because you're criticizing your shelter, that means you reject your shelter. This is one thing that happens when devotees are just about to fall down. When he's just about to leave the association of devotees, he starts finding fault with all the devotees. Oh, not good. Oh, wow. No one here is good. This is a problem. I should find out good association, ex-girlfriend. This happens, actually. There's a first test that the devotee is about to fall down. He starts criticizing the whole atmosphere. So naturally, you don't want to be in an atmosphere that has got so many faults. You don't want to be there. So you end up in a shelterless position. Back to Maya. Maya is always beckoning the jivas, come and enjoy. Then you go back thinking, you know, non-devotees are actually, I think they have even better qualities than devotees. You hear this thing also quite a bit when devotees are about to fall. They're actually, devotees are so fanatical. They don't have any mercy towards other jiva. They're always criticizing them. But my friend, he's a very honest person. Yes, he's doing sex life. He is eating meat. But he's a very honest person. He's not pretending. But these devotees, they're all pretending. I don't want to be with such hypocrites. I'm going back. That's how it happens. It's a fact. We've seen many times like this. In my short time in Krishna consciousness, I've seen many times like this. At least I can think of at least 4 or 5 cases immediately that I've seen like this. So, you know, if you're finding fault, you should consider, are you not a conditioned soul? Are you a completely perfected soul that there is no fault in you also? If someone was wanting to find fault with you, do you think they will have a hard time doing so? You're finding fault with so many others. If I wanted to find fault with you, do you think it would be difficult for me to do so? So it is very easy to find fault. That means you're not accepting the essence. What is the essence? That he's part and parcel of Krishna. He is also serving. That is the essence. And his material entanglement is superfluous. It's not the important feature. And it's not really for our consideration if we're not guru also. Our consideration is to see the essence and act accordingly. So if we want to do like that, hear from those who like to criticize due to not seeing the essence and the excessive fault, then we'll end up shelterless. Back to Maya. So many births will continue like that. That's my my thing. And that, so anyway, I saw something over here, but you're finished now. Then I saw your hand. Yeah, quickly.
It's not just raga, dvesha, but there's this idea that I've heard that we are fruitive, that we do want prema, ultimately. But what about when we're wanting to satisfy Krishna's senses?
That is high platform. No question of thinking like that. No question. We have to understand that we are deeply contaminated. That is the first stage of devotional development. Without acknowledging that I am deeply contaminated, how we will progress? How we can think of Krishna's sense enjoyment? We've been doing our own sense enjoyment since time immemorial. You think you can catch up Krishna's sense enjoyment so quickly? That is not possible. Srimad Bhagavatam describes, 14th chapter, that it is certainly true that for all created beings, it is their own self that is most dear. And the dearness of others, wife, wealth, etc., is due to the dearness of the self. This is counterintuitive because, and the purport explains, a mother will sacrifice even her own life for her child. Or why does she do that? Because she has an egoistic conception that I am the mother, this is my child. If she didn't have that egoistic conception, she would not make such a sacrifice. Therefore, her sacrifice is actually to satisfy herself, her own ego. If she didn't have that ego, she would not make that sacrifice. Understand that analogy? Or another, same analogy, another one is given, a patriot will give his life for the country. Why? Because he thinks, I'm a patriot of this country. If he didn't think that, would he do that sacrifice? No. That means that sacrifice is to satisfy that false egoistic conception. So similarly, we cannot just think of Krishna's sense enjoyment, because that false egoistic conception does not allow. We have to first dismantle the egoistic conception that is with service to Guru, with me, service in the mission of Guru. That is first stage of bhakti. First, Guru Bhakti, then Krishna Bhakti. That order. And getting Guru Bhakti is itself damn hard, to be real with you. It is not so easy. We're not so surrendered. So we should not jump ahead.
What about, does a disciple say, I am the disciple of Guru, for instance? Or,
yeah, okay, like, this is like that. I am the disciple of Guru. Then what does that mean? That I'm the servant of Guru, servant of the Guru's mission. And he has to act accordingly.
And that's egoistic too, but it's not false ego.
That is not false egoistic. We have false ego and real ego. We're not Buddhists, no ego. There's real ego and false ego. You want to say something? Yeah, we have about 2-3 minutes. I think there's one question over here also. Someone had a question? No? Okay. So
it'll be quick then. With this is a nice segue into what I was going to say. Because at the beginning, you do have to accept that engagement to purify your conception that it doesn't belong to me, but you still don't have any real spiritual conception. So you're serving, like, the mission of Guru, for instance. Prabhupada's disciples, they went out and just whatever Prabhupada said, somehow distribute the books and, like, whatever the thing was, you know, get it done. But because they all had the same order, to a large extent. You know, not like there was no problems, but they were able to see eye to eye. But then if there's different, quote unquote, we can just use the word guru, teaching different things, in the sense that the mission is not very clear, that this is for like one goal, then there's going to be obvious conflict because we're all in the bodily concept of life, even though my new ego is I'm trying to serve guru. Well, my idea of serving guru is different than your idea of serving guru, and then so in modern context of ISKCON society, you know, how do we, not like I have no conception, I'm just asking for your thoughts, how do we deal with this phenomenon?
Well, you know, generally this very complicated subject matter, which is, you know, a source of many discussions, I think, even on the GBC level. In essence, Prabhupada, we heard this from Bhima Prabhu also on the Sunday Feast class. Prabhupada liked that his ISKCON centers worked autonomously. He didn't want them to be centralized. So my basic understanding of this type of topic is that they should work autonomously. So in this section, you have a guru and he has his disciples there. I think it's healthy. You have over there a guru and his, and they're serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, according to the direction. Prabhupada, even when he was on the planet, would have like that. This summer president had to do his thing over there, that summer president. But then they should all come together to hear and chant. You know, like Prabhupada, especially leaders, they should come together, you know, in Mayapur, wherever. You know, Prabhupada's given various instructions about that also. And they should hear and chant together exclusively. You know, I've mentioned this to even Srila Rupa Maharaj, but it's just, you know, like for a week. All leaders come together, they render all the services to one another, they hear and chant together for 1 week, like that, and they go off into the respective places serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya in their respective sort of ways. It is not fair to say that everyone should serve in the exact same way the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Someone's going to want to do this, someone's going to want to do that. That's perfectly fine. It's also healthy. It may not be possible for two different groups of varying opinions to mix up in the same house. That might lead to unnecessary controversy. But if they can respect one another from a distance, understanding that they're rendering service to Krishna, and at least on the platform of Shravanam Kirtanam, they can still come together, then that can be a healthy society, it seems to me. I mean, that's how I conceive it. I've mentioned this once to Srila Prabhupada Maharaj also, and he also, you know, kind of confirmed that thought. It wasn't on the institutional level, it was on a smaller level. But that's my kind of thought of it. Temples should run autonomously, and they have their way of doing things, and that's perfectly good. There should be some basic respect from a distance, and at least on the platform of Shravanam Kirtanam, they should come together. They should not think, oh, that is the New York group or the Chicago group. On the platform of Shravanam Kirtanam, there can be purification of their relationships with one another. That's my basic understanding of a complicated. Time's up, Prabhu. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaudiya Premanandi.